This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
James Walters asks, have any black holes been found that are not at the centre of their galaxy?
So, to be clear, astronomers suspect that a lot of galaxies, particularly galaxies with active galactic nuclei that produce both jets and a lot of electromagnetic radiation from a central source, contain supermassive black holes with masses greater than 1 million solar masses. Additionally, the Milky Way and many other galaxies appear to contain quiescent black holes at their centers with similar masses. However, astronomers are still trying to prove that these massive compact objects can't be any other type of exotic physical phenomena, and there are still observations ongoing which will definitively prove that these things have to be supermassive black holes and nothing else. Nonetheless, everyone just assumes that these things are black holes, so we'll just go on from there. So aside from AGN, there's a different class of objects which are also typically assumed to contain potential black holes, and these are X-ray binaries. X-ray binary stars are a class of objects consisting of a normal star, so this could be a hydrogen-burning star like the Sun, or maybe a more evolved star which has become a red giant, and a compact star which could be either a white dwarf, a neutron star, or a black hole with a mass equivalent to or about the mass of a typical star. In these X-ray binary star systems, these two stars are very close together, so close that the compact object can gravitationally strip material off of the normal star. As the material falls onto a compact object, it gets gravitationally compressed and very hot, thus producing X-rays. One of the best examples of an X-ray binary in the Milky Way galaxy that potentially contains a black hole is Cygnus X-1, which is also one of the brightest X-ray sources in the sky. These objects are also very commonly seen spread throughout the disks of other galaxies. While it is likely that not all of them contain black holes, a few of them probably do. Additionally, a lot of people have been searching for black holes in the centers of globular clusters. The basic idea behind this is that globular clusters look like small versions of either elliptical galaxies or the bulges of disk galaxies, like spiral galaxies. And since the central black hole mass in galaxies is thought to be related to the galaxy bulge size, or if the galaxy is elliptical, just the size of the galaxy, people think that globular clusters should also contain black holes, but because globular clusters are much smaller, these black holes should be about the mass of about 1,000 times the mass of the Sun rather than 1,000,000 times the mass of the Sun. Research on this is ongoing, but there has been some evidence that people have been finding black holes in the centers of globular clusters, for example, through looking at the motions of stars and inferring from that what central masses may be present in globular clusters.
David Kings asked, would there be any noticeable orbital changes in the local group of galaxies following the merger of the Andromeda and the Milky Way galaxies? For example, I am assuming the combined mass would possibly have greater gravitational effect on other objects.
So this question reminds me of the standard introductory astronomy question about what would happen to the orbit of the Earth in the solar system if the Sun was instantly replaced with a black hole which had exactly the same mass. Nothing would happen to the Earth's orbit. As far as the Earth and the other planets are concerned, the mass at the center of the solar system has not changed, and therefore there's no change in the gravitational force being exerted on the other planets, so they just continue on in their normal orbits. Another example to consider would be the situation where you have a dwarf star or planet orbiting two stars in close binary orbit around each other, as is seen, for example, in Alpha Centauri. From the perspective of the smaller object, it is orbiting the center of mass of the star system and not orbiting two separate stars. So if those two stars at the center of that star system were to merge together into one larger star, the mass would not change. Assuming that there's no explosion or anything like that, the mass would not change, and therefore the dwarf star or the planet would just continue on in its orbit without really being affected by what's happening in the center. So, to return to the local group, if the Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxy merge, then the mass at the center of the local group is still the same, but it's just more centrally concentrated. Now, there are a lot of dwarf galaxies which are orbiting the Milky Way or the Andromeda galaxy, and if the two spiral galaxies were to merge together, then all of these dwarf galaxies would probably get caught up in the merger process. Similarly, any dwarf galaxies which are sitting kind of in between those two spiral galaxies will also get caught up in the merger process and will also probably fall into the final galaxy which forms from the merger of the Milky Way and Andromeda. However, any dwarf galaxies which are located far enough away from the merger process that they don't initially get caught up in the merger will probably continue on in their orbits around the center of mass in the local group without being significantly affected. The distribution of mass in the local group will have changed a little bit from the perspective of these dwarf galaxies and these really distant orbits, but probably not enough for their orbits to change too significantly, and probably not enough for them to end up, for one reason or another, somehow falling into the center of the local group.
Hindoplesis asks, how do you know that c, the speed of light, is constant over time and size of the universe? Would a c relative to the size of the universe not explain accelerating expansion more elegantly?
So, astronomers have been studying this for a while, actually. And in particular, there are a few astronomers who have specialized in measuring a quantity called the fine structure constant, which is a function of the speed of light and a few other fundamental constants. So, among other things, the fine structure constant is related to small variations in the energy levels within individual electron shells of an atom. When looking at the spectrum, or the rainbow of colors produced from atoms in a thin, hot gas, the light will appear as a series of bright lines, which is typically referred to as a line emission spectrum. This light is produced at very specific wavelengths when an electron falls from one specific energy level to another specific energy level within an atom within the gas. However, the energy levels within the individual atoms usually contain multiple sublevels, which differ from each other just a little bit in terms of energy. And so some of these observed spectral lines could be seen to split into two separate lines of slightly different colors if measured carefully enough. By carefully examining the spectra of high redshift objects, particularly quasars, it is possible to search for the signs of this line splitting. Although in practice the split spectral lines appear to blur together, it is possible to distinguish how much the lines are split because the combined spectral line emission will appear to broaden a bit in wavelength. The results from these analyses have actually shown that the fine structure constant does not change, even at very high redshifts. This in turn suggests the speed of light itself also does not change. So, while it's an interesting idea that the changes in the speed of light could account for the apparent accelerating of the expansion of the universe, it's unlikely that this is actually the case based on these observations and measurements of the fine structure constant. That still leaves us with the prevailing theory for why this is happening, which is the theory of dark energy.